How aware are you?
You're probably aware that mammograms are a great way to detect breast cancer.
And that regular, moderate walking can be good for heart health.
But are you aware that the fifth most common cancer in the United States is uterine cancer?
And that the average age at diagnosis is 60?
Well, I definitely wasn't when I was diagnosed with endometrial cancer at the age of 32.
And that's exactly what inspired this podcast.
We are Mary and Alex, a mother-daughter duo engaged in multi-generational dialogue surrounding subjects related to gynecologic cancer, women's healthcare, and various other topics that impact our daily lives.
We are
Down There
Aware. Welcome back to another episode of Down There Aware on this fourth Monday of the month of April.
Yep. It's hard to believe we're already in April.
Yes, we are. It's just clicking away.
It is. It's summer down here in Florida.
It's been summer
for a
good
while.
Bit of spring. I think we had like a week of spring. Yeah. So today, let me first say this. We, because of COVID and because of all of Alex's medical issues, we've had a lot of downtime. And so we've watched a lot of television.
Yeah, we have.
We have.
With the availability via streaming platforms.
Oh, my goodness.
Not only have we watched a lot of television, we've binged a lot of television. And, you know, current stuff, older stuff. It's just something to pass the time when you're an invalid.
And, you know, it's been good. It's shows are a good conversation starter. And we've had a lot of good discussions about things we've seen on television. So I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And what else are you going to do in 2020?
Yeah.
Really couldn't go anywhere. Couldn't do anything.
Yeah. But we got to talking about some of the things we've watched. And we we finished Downton Abbey and the two subsequent movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, one movie.
Oh, the other one's not out yet.
The other one is not out yet.
Okay.
But we were way behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
Getting started on Downton Abbey. And I think the like inner rebel in me was like, everybody's watching this. Don't do it. Back when it was popular.
I don't know why I didn't do it other than I think when it was big, I was working full time and I was in school full time. And yeah, I just didn't have time. So I didn't watch a whole lot of TV then anyway.
So in watching these, we watched a lot of period dramas. And in watching these, we've seen how, whether fictionalized or accurately portrayed, the role of women in that time in society, as well as medically women were treated or not treated well or whatever. And so that has just kind of stood out to us.
Yeah, I've enjoyed kind of seeing in Downton Abbey in particular, we saw the growth of women and what they were I hate to say allowed to do, but what was not frowned upon.
Societally appropriate.
Yes. And so we kind of watched that change, and that was very interesting to see how it changed. You know, you kind of knew that through history and that kind of thing, but watching it in a drama, and since we binged it, we were able to see some continuity. It was interesting to me to see that played out on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, they covered a time period from 1912, the sinking of the Titanic, through the late 20s, 1920s. And so, I mean, just to imagine all of the technological advances that happened. And they threw some things in there as just like a joke or, you know, a funny aspect of the show, like when one of the servants gets an electric toaster for the first time.
Yeah,
or
she burns the toast
and
a blender,
and then a hand mixer.
Yeah, mixer.
You know, and they're worried that it'll take their jobs away because this hand mixer can whip the cream and the eggs and whatever. And so it's just, you know, kind of fascinating. I've always been fascinated with history anyway, of how people used to live. And I'm constantly saying whenever we visit a town or a new place of, I wonder what that looked like before it was like a decrepit old rusty barn or building, or like, what did that look like when they built it, and how, you know, how are the streets different and whatever. But, you know, I think some of the things that stood out to me in particular with like their medical needs are, you know, in one of the seasons, one of the women is pregnant and giving birth, and she turns out to have eclampsia, and her mother, is concerned and wants to, you know, give precedence to the doctor who's known her whole life. But the husband, who will be the baby's grandfather, says, well, he's not as credentialed as this fancy pants guy with a big fat title. And, you know, there's this kind of war over it. And the woman giving birth ends up dying. And
because the father won out.
Right. Because the grandfather won of, hey, this guy with a title, you know, we're going to go with his recommendation. And it, you know, that whole scene, it really just brought me back to, you know, your body best, and your parent, your spouse, your you know, someone close to you who's been with you through all of these medical issues, they know you. And, you know, this woman who's giving birth had passed out and couldn't speak for herself. But the mother was really trying to fight and advocate for her daughter of, look, this doctor birthed her.
He delivered her.
Delivered her.
Yeah.
And here you are.
He did not birth her.
No. Sometimes I struggle with words. So, you know, we'll just go with it. But anyway, it was that whole, like, you are your own best advocate.
Well, and the mother was trying to advocate for her. She said, you know, he delivered her. He's been with her every illness she's ever had. He's been with her through this entire pregnancy. And then the father, because he was a lot more politically minded and aware of how people perceived their family, he put that above everything else and lived to regret it.
Well, and also he pulled the man card.
Yeah.
He pulled the, I'm the head of this household. I will make decisions. I have the title or whatever. And, you know, and also, if you've ever watched Downton Abbey, the dynamic is he's British and she's American. Mm-hmm. So there was already that kind of rub anyway. But yeah, it just put her in her place, right? Of like, you're a woman, you couldn't know any better. You know.
And it really did. It caused major issues between the two of them. You know, there was just a ripple effect. So that was very interesting to watch. Another thing that was interesting to watch on Downton Abbey was how, when the war started, how the women stepped up. And just in my lifetime, I've seen that happen with women and war, and how, of course, now women go to war, but not as many as men. And so when the men went off to the war in the Middle East in the 90s, I saw the women stepping up and starting organizations and putting together care packages and being support groups for the wives of the military men and the husbands of the military women. So that was interesting to see how it happened during the Downton Abbey age.
Yeah, that World War One, you know, time, even to the point of one of the, you know, high aristocratic children says, well, I can drive the tractor. I can do that. He's off to war. I can. Mm-hmm. And her grandmother, who was obviously from a whole different era and clinging on to this, really hadn't accepted the turn of the 19th century or turn of the 20th century. You know, she was born in the 19th century and kind of clung on to that. She just looked appalled that her granddaughter would be driving and, you know,
a tractor, no less.
A tractor of everything. So, you know, it's just really fascinating how in such a short period of time, how things progressed, you know, favorably for women. And it's akin to if you look at when the Wright brothers first flew to the time we landed on the moon, it's a very short period of time that we went from never having flown to landing on the moon, sending people to another orbiting on. Like it kind of blows my mind. But that something about that turn of the century, there was just so much innovation happening. And that was true for, you know, women and how their roles changed in society.
Yeah, same with women working during the 1920s, which was the time for Downton Abbey we were watching. Women began to work outside the home and have positions of responsibility. And it was interesting to see how everybody reacted to that. Some really didn't like it and protested. But the people who really wanted to do it did it. And it was kind of interesting to see. You know, we even now in 2022 have people who fight about, I'm a stay at home mom, I'm a work outside the home mom, which is better for the children? What, you know, and you'd think we'd learn 100 years later that, different things work differently for different people. And it's not up to us to judge and point fingers.
Yeah, it really kills me. One of my primary sources of entertainment is YouTube. I think I'm a product of my generation, but
you think?
But I really like to watch real people film their lives, whether they're going on vacation, whether it's just their family life or whatever. And it blows my mind that anybody I follow who has children, whenever they're talking about something going on with their children or them being a mother or whatever, they spend half the time of the video saying, now I'm not saying, I like totally defending themselves of, I'm not saying what you do is bad. I'm not saying that breast milk is better than formula. I'm not saying that, you know, a pacifier is not good. I'm not like all of these things when it's just like, have we gotten to be such keyboard warriors that we can't accept that you live your life the way you live your life? I'm going to live my life the way I live my life. And that's just how it's going to be. We're different people.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I do think that's what's happened. People are keyboard warriors or some are keyboard cowards and sit behind the keyboard and, you know, just let people have it when they are saying things they'd never say to someone's face, but being very judgmental. And it really serves no purpose. But I know you're right. Different things that I've seen, especially on Instagram, people just spend so much time apologizing for what they posted. And it's like, you know, I may not agree with you, but it's okay. I'm okay with you posting that.
Right. Well, and, you know, another series that we have just gotten into, we haven't finished it. It's by the makers of Downton Abbey. It's called Jamestown, and it's all about the founding of Jamestown. And it's actually about the period, about 12 years after Jamestown was founded, when they sent women over. Women, I don't know how they were selected, or they haven't really gotten into that, but they got on a ship and their purpose was to become, men paid for their passage to become their wives. It's kind of like the first mail order bride, yeah, of sorts. And you know, talk about hiding behind your keyboard there. Of course it's fictionalized, but there are some women on the show who they say things and I think, would I ever say something that tongue thrashing to someone in like to their face? But they didn't know how to, they didn't communicate in any other way. Like maybe write a letter, but you only wrote a letter when you lived an ocean apart.
So. It took a month to get there.
Exactly. So yeah, it just fascinates me by some things that people say, knowing the consequences of the day, you know, knowing that, you know, in particular, there was one girl who, you know, witches were a big thing back then. And so they were accusing her of being a witch, and her peers who knew that she wasn't, obviously, were saying, just shut your mouth, like, stop talking, stop saying this. And she would continue to just say what she thought. And, you know, because she should be able to say what she thinks. And for someone in the 1600s, a woman in the 1600s to feel like she could do that. I'm sure there were women like that and they probably burned to death on a stake.
Well, and that's something that has been really interesting in watching Jamestown is all of the different characters played in that show, we probably know people right now who are just like, there's the instigator, the one who always stirs the pot. There's the outspoken one who always has something to say, even when it's not her place. There's the quiet, meek one who won't say anything, even to defend herself. I mean, in many ways, women haven't changed at all.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one aspect of these period dramas is because certainly things like Downton Abbey and Jamestown are not historical narratives, right? It's not like The Crown. Now, of course, put that into perspective there. I'm sure there are some things that are dramatized and embellished because we don't know what was happening in Buckingham Palace. But, you know, it's not meant to be an exact portrayal, but they do, I think, a really good job of taking what we do know of the time and then creating these characters who can represent different aspects of different people.
Well, and, you know, history is so generalized, in many instances, that when writing a script, they have to fill in blanks. I mean, or else we wouldn't watch it. If we just watched an outline of a show, which is kind of what history gives us most of the time, we wouldn't watch it because it wouldn't hold our attention. So I do think they have to fill in some of the empty spots. But I also believe in the integrity of some writing in particular. And they're careful that it's historically accurate in what they fill in with. So that, again, has been intriguing and interesting and sometimes kind of surprising. Just the fact that men paid the travel expenses for the women to come, but it in their minds, they owned the women because they paid
not
for
just travel
in their
expenses. Minds, in the law.
Well, yeah.
I mean, like, they are very clear about that. And, you know, when we first, I think we were just watching the first episode and I paused it and I was like, I got to look this up. I need to know if I'm going into this show thinking that the concept of these women being bought and paid for to come to America to be wives, to expand Jamestown, because they had you know, the men had established the farms and things like that. If that was close to being historically accurate,
did it really
or
happen?
Did they really just make it up because nobody knows how women got there in the first place? And it's pretty dang accurate. I mean, obviously the storylines and the drama and whatever is, made up, but the actual concept that these men paid for these women to come over and paid their wages. And, you know, one woman was a thief and got out of jail to come over. And it was that concept of like starting a new life. It was still obviously a territory of, the UK. And so that, or of Great Britain at the time. And so, you know, they weren't necessarily coming to a new world, but
they felt like they were. They,
yeah. And I mean, they were miles apart. Nobody knew them. Nobody knew their history. Yeah. They could become who they wanted to be or stay the same.
And it was a fresh start for them. But to watch the women and their personalities and how that affected a land where there were only men before that. That was huge. The change when all of a sudden women are present and, you know, all that that meant to what used to be a land of men. It changed it considerably.
Exactly. And, you know, just women bring a different, just a different perspective, a different lived experience. And so they definitely saw things differently. And it's just been fascinating to kind of think. And oftentimes when I'm watching shows like that, I'm like, they're walking around in filth. And there's an episode where people get sick and they discover that it's because the outhouse is too close to the well. And I'm like, that makes me want to just vomit. And you think, like, thank goodness there's no smell-o-vision because everything probably smelled just
well. We couldn't
terrible.
Watch it.
No, we couldn't watch those. But yeah, it's, you know, just fascinating how we've gone in the last 100 years from where women couldn't advocate for themselves, they couldn't make their own decisions, to I'm 35, I live alone, I go places alone, I travel alone, I, you know, other than needing physical assistance or, you know, whatever, I walk alone. Like, yeah, I'm doing it, you know, it's unheard of. And, you know, if someone from 100 years ago heard this, they would just be bewildered.
But it is also interesting, one character in particular, how manipulative she is. And she's able to go from male character to male character and say things and do things that helps her get her way. And I know people like that, don't you?
Yeah, but I was also thinking it also is a time where not only did men treat women differently, owned them, things like that, or thought they owned them, things like that, but they also had this idea of women, female fragility, and they're meek and mild and demure and they can't tell a lie. And so women are often believed, mm-hmm. you know, and they're in both Downton Abbey and Jamestown, there's sexual assault. And it is fascinating to me in 2022 of, you know, women who they were greatly harmed and they knew who did it, yet they felt shame. And I think some people probably still do. I would like to think that we've broken a stigma in a way, but, you know, that there was just no way they would come forward. And they didn't even want to tell their husband because they were, you know, made unclean and,
yeah,
and things like that.
Yeah, they felt lesser than.
Yeah. And so just seeing those kinds of issues portrayed and how, even though I think we have come a long way, I think we still have that kind of internalized as a woman, like you don't want to be seen as ashamed or, you know, made unclean or whatever.
Well, and something else that came out of it for me watching it is we've talked a lot on this podcast about being an advocate for ourselves and speaking up for ourselves. If something didn't feel quite right, we should do something, go to the doctor, et cetera. And I think a lot of that may have stemmed from way back in the day when women were expected to know their place and be quiet and cook and clean and didn't really speak up for themselves. You know, like you said, in the sexual assault cases, we saw that. But I think just in daily life as well, they were silenced. And I think it's taken a long time for us as women to stick up for ourselves. And maybe that's one reason why when we go to the doctor, we have to muster up courage to say what we think. The vast amount of doctors are male. And so, you know, that may intimidate some people. And I'm hoping the more we talk about it, not just on this podcast, but our society in general, the more we talk about sticking up for ourselves, being an advocate for ourselves, I hope we convince ourselves and other women, especially the young girls who need to grow up knowing that. I hope we can convince ourselves that that's probably the most important thing we can do as a woman in our healthcare is to advocate for ourselves.
Well, and that's really all you have.
Yeah.
You know, I can look back at multiple issues I've had where if I didn't ask questions or if I didn't really press forward and say, okay, but I'm really concerned about this, that I would have been dismissed. And it's almost every day, if not every day, that I read an article about a woman who they thought her canker sore, or the sore in her mouth was just a canker sore and it ended up being stage 4 oral cancer. Or this woman who they dismissed a lump in her breast as a cyst and it was stage 4 breast cancer. Or a woman who, you know, had crazy heavy periods and cramps and all kinds of issues and was dismissed as that's just your plight as a woman. But then she ended up with, you know, cervical cancer or ovarian cancer or uterine cancer or, you know, any of them. And so it's every time I'm in a doctor's office, I just am reminded of I know myself best. Physically, I know my body better than anybody else. And if I don't speak up, who will?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's not easy because there have been some doctors who have been very arrogant and who have been unhelpful. And you know what? I didn't see them again.
Yeah.
I found someone else who would listen. But that's not easy either with insurance and who's in your network, who's not in your network, who can you see, who can't you see? And that's a whole topic for a whole other episode.
Well, and I was going to say that very thing. I think probably there are times when something is brought to a doctor's attention and he or she has to go through A, B, C, and D to comply with insurance regulations before something else can happen. So I'm not saying every time it's a doctor's fault because they didn't look further into it. It may be delayed because a doctor is doing what he or she has to do because of insurance. I know with me, I was taken aback just a few weeks ago by a call from my doctor's office, my electrophysiology cardiology office, in regard to my defibrillator. And they said, you know, your battery is getting low. The alarm is probably going to go off in the next few weeks. And she said, now when it goes off, you need to call our office and we'll get you in. It's scheduled to go off at 8:30 a.m. and it will go off every day at 8:30 a.m. until we address it. And she even said, you know, it's the alarm that goes do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And I've had the alarm go off before, so I knew it was that minor third interval. And I knew what to listen for. But I said to her, can't I just go ahead and schedule, get my new defibrillator or get the battery changed or whatever you have to do? And she said, no, because of insurance, we have to wait until the alarm sounds and we know the battery is dead. And I just can't, I didn't shoot the messenger. I just told her thank you and goodbye. And I'd let her know when my alarm went off. But I was furious. I was so angry to think that I'm going to have to wait to have that go off in my chest and deal with then having to schedule surgery, only because my insurance won't pay for it otherwise.
Well, and even with my latest issue with what we know now is a pinched nerve in my back, I knew the moment that I woke up in excruciating pain, I knew what was going on with me. And I knew that it had progressed and, you know, like I was capable of knowing this. This was March 20th, 20, something,
yeah,
like
something
that.
Like that.
And so that was over a month ago. But I was seen at the ER and they just treated symptoms poorly, I might add. But then I went to an orthopedist and they did tests and then they sent me to a specialist and they did some more tests, and now I'm awaiting an appointment with a neurosurgeon that he's so booked he couldn't get me in until June, when I knew in late March exactly what it was. But no, because of insurance and because of this, we have to go through this proper process. And I get it. Like, I understand, you know, you need the evidence and you need this and you need all of these pieces put together. But it really does frustrate you that it kind of drags out the process.
Well, and I don't get it in regard to, you know, we're very intelligent, our medical community, and where the level of society, where society is now, we ought to be able to figure some. The insurance companies, they're very smart about getting their money, so we ought to be able to figure out a process that takes into account what is best for the patient, not what's best for the insurance company.
Well, they don't care about the patients.
Well, that's true.
And
I believe that.
Again, another topic for another day. But I have really strong feelings about the insurance industry, particularly the medical insurance industry. But it's, you know, my dad always jokes and says that, you know, the insurance building in town because it's the fanciest and the most
and the tallest
lavish and,
yeah.
He's not wrong.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just that we saw it happen once. I mean, even when we took you in with your brain issues, we knew that's what it was. You had the exact same symptoms you had had when you were 15. We knew that's what it was, but you had to jump through hoops and go through the pain and all of that before it would be addressed. And that was infuriating.
And I think some of that definitely is insurance and their processes that they make you go through and whatever. But I also think that some of it can be, and again, this is not labeling all medical professionals, but there are a group of medical professionals who are so arrogant because they went through so much more school than you did. They, you know, and it's true. You did. You, that's your expertise. I get it.
That's why we're coming to you.
But my body is not your expertise.
Yep.
And, you know, we even joked when I saw the orthopedist about, actually not the orthopedist, but the specialist at Mayo about this. And he, you know, did a neurological exam and all that stuff. And he pretty much said, well, this is textbook of the L5 nerve being compressed. And we both looked at each other and we're like, I've never been textbook anything. It's kind of a refreshing thing, feeling.
You've always been the weird
magnet.
I've always
been the weird thing with the weird symptoms that, oh, well, it doesn't normally present like that. So that has put me through loops, right? Yeah. Even though I go in and I say, look, I know what this is. I remember one time I had what they called an MS episode. That's a whole other conversation. But when my best friend dropped me off at the ER because she went to go park, I hobbled in because I was having some issues. And I went to the desk and they said, how can I help you? And I knew exactly what was going on. I didn't know what it was, but I knew how to identify my symptoms. And I was like, I'm having neurological symptoms. I am having weakness. I'm having, you know, this, that, and the other. And they looked at me like I had four heads. I mean, it just, and finally they, you know, moved me through and I got a diagnosis and was treated and whatever, but it, shook me that like, they just, for a while, I'm in a college town and I was young and they just kind of thought I was drunk on I think it was like a Wednesday at 2 p.m. But, you know, they just kind of passed me off instead of the assumption is never you're an intelligent person who knows your body, who has a relative knowledge of medicine, but it's always you don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's been my experience. And again, not painting a broad stroke on, I have had some amazing doctors who I would never call arrogant
for sure.
But there are some in the system for sure.
Well, and I think the other thing, not just the broad stroke about how you don't know anything, but the majority of the people we see are XYZ. And so we're going to lump you into that category instead of listening to you as a unique individual, you know, our unique patient, and looking at you with clear vision.
Yeah, there's a bell curve for a reason in research. And like, I get that the vast majority of people are going to fall in the middle of the belt. Like, I just took statistics. I get it. But there are always outliers. And you know, in medicine, you have to figure out how to treat those outliers, because it's not, you can't just throw them to the wind and say, well, you're not the middle population. You don't really matter.
Well, I think it's a good lesson for all of us in regard to how we see people. When I was 16, I was at the beach with some friends and I passed out, hit my head on the concrete. And I don't know where this woman, if she was at the beach, I think she was at the beach, and they called an ambulance. And as they were loading me in the ambulance, she said to the EMTs, well, you need to check her for drugs. I think she's on drugs. And I found out later she knew my brother and sister, and we've talked about how my brother and sister were drug addicts. And so she made an assumption that I had passed out at the beach because I was on drugs, simply because she was looking at me through those glasses. When now, as I look back on different incidences in my life, I had HCM then, didn't know I had HCM then, and I'd been trudging through the sand and my heart was beating overtime and, you know, it was too much for me. And so again, it's the way we look at people. We take our experiences, and sometimes that is a detriment because we accuse others of something that we shouldn't.
Well, that is very true. So today was a little bit of a different kind of episode. It was more chatty. We wanted, you know, we just got to talking about the shows we had watched and how women were portrayed, you know, in that time period and how it's changed. And we just really wanted to chat about that. So we would love to hear your experiences about being a woman in modern society or any stories that you have to share with us. You can do that on our social media, which is at Down There Aware, Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, Twitter, all of those places. You can email us down there or DownThereAware@gmail.com or check out our website, www.downthereaware.com, where we have show notes and all of our past episodes are there. And we would just love to connect with you in that way. Thanks for listening.